Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
And it is The Advertising Show, brand new year as we get things rolling here. Actually, week number two of the new year with Ray Schillens, Brad Forsythe, The Advertising Show, brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit online at adage.com. Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production, and want to invite you all to visit the website. Maybe not during this show, but sometime throughout the week. We've got the advertisingshow.com. Cool thing about that is you can actually listen to the show in kind of a condensed version. It takes how many minutes, Brad?
79.
79 minutes of your time to actually listen to the show, and you can share it with a friend if you'd like as well, too. That's the advertisingshow.com. Today we have Jeff Jarvis. The world-renowned Jeff Jarvis, mm-hmm. Right?
That's worth it.
The president and creative director of Advance.net. And Jeff will be on the show for the full 2 hours today, so yeah. We'll have him. We've got, as the new year rolls here, a wellness time bomb that Patrick Meyer is going to talk about this hour. John Margolis is with us, guerrilla marketing for the 21st century. And his thing is, can I buy you a drink? And,
sure.
And our answer is, sure.
Absolutely.
Why not?
Two.
Jeffrey Gittimer, establish confidence. Establish confidence in your contacts so that they don't go looking elsewhere for other people. Andy Borowitz as well. There's some hirings going on at the White House. And so we've got, we hopefully got you for the whole 2 hours this weekend at the Advertising Show.
Yeah. And, you know, mentioning our guest, Jeff Jarvis, he is a blogger extraordinaire, has some great ideas and great thoughts about the future of digital media. So if you've ever wondered about digital media, he's got some really good stuff.
Well, good. We can talk a lot about that
coming
up here.
And, you know, you were speaking of drinking, and I guess that's something that's, you know, everybody it's in your rearview mirror at this point, isn't it?
My rearview mirror?
Drinking.
Yeah, really.
From New Year's Eve.
Yeah, but there really wasn't much.
Well, why are you wearing the diaper and the little hat? I mean, is it that over?
It's my character. I only play Cupid.
Hey, Jose Cuervo.
Not Cupid.
This is one of your favorites. Jose Cuervo has just launched a TV ad in the United States promoting responsible drinking. That's kind of curious. Created by Arnell Group, the ad tries to be playful, Ray, while reminding consumers to drive responsibly. But here's the interesting part. The campaign is, or this particular spot is entitled Reverse. The spot opens with a group of friends about to drive away from a party, and then the ad actually begins to run backwards on the tape as if it's being rewound. And then focusing on the driver, the camera watches a group of friends as they back up to the house, which I noticed you do frequently when you do tequila.
Sure. Right.
Especially those shots.
No, stop that.
But the soundtrack also runs in reverse, so even his response, "Not tonight, I'm driving," plays backwards, which requires subtitles to clarify what he's saying,
right.
Which I thought was a clever idea for Jose Cuervo. But I'm having a problem with drinking Jose Cuervo responsibly and driving.
See, anytime I hear one of those ads or see a tagline on one of the alcohol spots, I think, okay, who are they paying off? The litigation?
Because, yeah, it's a disclaimer. Right.
Think about it.
Yeah.
Think about it.
It's a disclaimer.
It's like, okay, we got to say this. It's kind of like the disclaimers in the drug ads, which take up more time than the drug ads. Oh, well.
Mm-hmm. With the Super Bowl coming up, I understand Depends is coming out with a disclaimer. Use these responsibly.
I'm sure that would be a good idea.
You know what I'm saying?
Change often.
Well, you can watch the halftime festivities.
That's right. I'm sure many people will this year. Paul McCartney is, isn't Paul McCartney slated for this year's event? I think it is.
I'm not up on it. I do have some content on cost for this year's Super Bowl, which will be up over last year. We're paying $2.4 million for a 30 instead of $2.3 million, which CBS had last year, this year, of course, on Fox, February 6th.
Right.
Super Bowl XXX1X, which I guess is what, 30? Nine.
It's an extra large.
Yeah.
Yeah.
10, 20, 30, one on the other side of the X, nine. Yeah.
We've got to get a little bit more up on our Roman numerals.
Well, when they started speaking Latin is when I dropped out of school. Yeah. I think it was third grade.
Such a good Catholic boy you are. We've got Patrick Meyer on the way here on the Advertising Show.
Welcome to Understanding the Future Now. It's the Marketing Insider featuring Patrick Meyer.
A friend of mine is a top chef. But what's interesting is that he's got a series of kids, but his two youngest have late-onset diabetes. So you ask yourself, what's going on in our environment and what we eat? And that, my friends, is what I call the wellness time bomb. because underneath the surface, there is a time bomb around obesity and wellness and what's in our food. It stems from capitalism. The model is great from a business standpoint, but occasionally capitalism gets out of whack, particularly when we're focused on profit. Let me give you an example of some of the things that are sitting underneath the surface, and it's reflected in consumer numbers. On a survey we did recently, the majority of consumers said they were very concerned about wellness and obesity and weight. General Mills announced that they're going to whole grains for all their cereals. But get close to consumers and nutrition experts and wellness people, and they'll tell you that's a really smart move. So what are you doing if you're in the food and beverage category? Are you addressing the wellness issue? Do you have a plan that's going to put you in position for the next 5 years when this becomes a giant issue? Here's my message to you. If you're in a food or beverage or fast food or restaurant category, take a look at your consumer and what are their needs and wants. If you don't have the right products or ingredients in what you're serving up, you better find your way to get to them. And finally, look for competitive opportunities, because if you move and are smarter and better deliver against wellness, you'll find a competitive opportunity versus your competition.
You've been listening to The Marketing Insider, heard every week here on The Advertising Show. Join us next week for more insight into the future of marketing.
This is Patrick Meyer, CEO of Now. And remember, the marketing revolution has begun. For more, go to nowinc.net.
Patrick Meyer on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. On the way, we've got Jeff Jarvis, President and Creative Director of Advance.net. You know, it's a very society where we love to sue people, right? Mm-hmm. There are lots of suits going on mm-hmm. here. Now, I'm not so sure I don't disagree with this. The Minnesota Attorney General has charged two subsidiaries of Capital One Financial Corporation with false advertising, consumer fraud, and deceptive trade practices in their marketing. How about that?
Hmm.
And what they're saying is, according to a lawsuit filed at the end of last month, commercials from Capital One Bank and Capital One FSB are, quote, simply false and mislead consumers, have the tendency and capacity to deceive consumers, or the likelihood to create consumer confusion or misunderstanding as to the interest rate on the credit card. And you know what? I half believe that.
Of course. I mean, don't they all mislead you? I mean, you buy into those low rates, and then, you know,
sure,
3 months later,
yeah,
you get bumped. Fortunately for you or me, we don't have to do this, but for a lot of people out there that are first-time credit, you know, card users may, you know, get into that deal.
It's called puffery, and it's something that advertisers shouldn't mm-hmm. do. It's a shame that they're doing it, though. Hey, and I think it's really interesting that they've been called on the carpet.
Well, and good for them. What state was that? Michigan, did you say?
No, Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Yeah.
You know, Patrick Meyer bet.
It's cold up there. That's all I have to do is shoot, you know.
Patrick Meyer's bet on nutrition and so forth. I was at the gym yesterday, and I thought it was kind of peculiar. As I walked in, I could smell spicy chicken wings from, apparently the staff there was having chicken wings. And, of course, I would have loved to have joined them, but I was there to, you know, be disciplined, and I thought it was weird.
Yeah, that's unusual to smell chicken wings.
It really was.
Unless you go to the Hooters gym. And that would be pretty
appropriate. That's a different kind of exercise.
That's exactly right. Yeah. We've got Jeff Jarvis on the way on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Jeff is president and creative director at Advance.net. We've got him for the whole 2 hours today, so stay with us.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
What's up? Dino's stolen the different vitamins we need to make Flintstones.
Yabba dabba doo, yabba dabba doo. Flintstone vitamins are good to chew with vitamin A, vitamin B, vitamin C, and vitamin D. Help your body work and grow right.
We put them all together to make Flintstones vitamins.
On The Advertising Show, Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth. Brad takes his Flintstones with glucosamine.
Yes.
Right, exactly right.
Correct.
And they make glucosamine, by the way, in a liquid form.
Do they really?
Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, Bruce is taking some of that
shooting
stuff.
Shooting it up or what?
I don't think so.
No, liquid.
Liquid. You add it
smoke
to
it in a Coke pipe?
No, you add it to a beverage.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
Very simple. Jeff Jarvis is our guest for this hour and next on The Advertising Show. Jeff is president and creative director at Advance.net. which oversees the internet operations for Advanced Publications, Vanity Fair, Glamour, Vogue, and Condé Nast. Internet activities, he is the former television critic for TV Guide and People, and before that, Jeff was the associate publisher and Sunday editor of the New York Daily News. In 90, he was the founding managing editor of Entertainment Weekly. He's also held positions at the San Francisco Examiner and the Chicago Tribune. And now, at the height of his career, he's on the Advertising Show. Mm-hmm. This is good.
Downhill from here.
From Parsippany, New Jersey. No, that's where they found the guy with the
cement shoes?
No. That probably, too. No, with a little laser pen. He was aiming it at airplanes and helicopters.
I heard about that. So. Was that where he was?
Jeff, do you have a laser pen?
No, I do not. I'm innocent.
Okay. Good. Well, that solves that problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, welcome to the show, Jeff, and thank you for joining us today. I wanted to, since Ray did such a great job of reading your bio there, why don't we just, extend that a little bit. As president and creative director of AdvanceNet, wonderful company of publications that you represent, give us a little sense of your job. What's a typical work week for you like, Jeff? And please don't say no week is typical.
Well, it's changed over time. I've worked primarily on the newspaper side, newspapers, and we have papers, of course, in Cleveland and Oregon and New Orleans and New Jersey and other garden spots of the country, and nowadays work on the online sites. So I'm trying to find new vistas for online, which has brought me back into citizens media and blogging and figuring out some new ways to get people involved at a very local level on those sites.
And speaking of blogging, you are probably more popularly known as a blogger as well as being the creative director and president of AdvanceNet. Is that a fair assessment?
Just different crowds.
Yeah. And the name of your blogging site?
Is buzzmachine.com.
Yeah. And incidentally, Ray, earlier this week I was tuning in Howard Stern, and just caught the tail end of Jeff being on Howard Stern. And I think, what were you doing on Stern?
Our mutual fight against FCC censorship and FCC trying to kneecap the First Amendment.
Yeah.
So I was talking about some freedom of information requests that I had filed with the FCC to discover that it's only a few prigs and prudes who are really causing the problems of the fines there.
Well, I want to talk about that since you mentioned it. And eventually we're going to get around to Buzz Machine because blogging today is such an interesting idea and concept that's really taking hold and it's going to do nothing but get a hotter topic on into 05. But, back to the First Amendment issues. You have suggested, and others have as well, that some of these matters that the public are up in arms with and that the FCC reacts to is really a small community of people, and maybe the number of people that are actually complaining are, in some cases, single digits. Is this true?
Absolutely. I filed a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, request regarding Fox's $1.2 million fine for Married by America, which was the FCC's largest in its history. And they had said that 159 people caused that complaint, which right there I thought was ridiculous. 5 million homes watched, yet 159 people could get this show fined $1.2 million. Mm-hmm. But I asked for all the complaints. When they sent them to me, they said, well, actually it was 90 we miscounted, and they really came from 23 people who used CCs. And then when I read the complaints themselves, I found that all but two were identical. They all came from the Parents Television Council complaint factory, by people who may not even have seen the show.
And describe the organization you just mentioned.
Brett Bozell, a religious right-wing organization trying to prevent us from watching what we want to watch. Thinks we need a national nanny. And the problem here, of course, is my view comes out of First Amendment absolutism and defending the First Amendment against these kinds of nannies who would tell us what we could and could not do.
Right.
And that's the problem I have with what the FCC is doing. And when three people can cause millions to not watch what they want to watch, and the truth is this show was so bad that the marketplace had already gotten rid of it. We didn't need any nannies to say it was a bad show. It was off the air. I trust the marketplace. I trust the people a lot more. I don't trust the FCC or government ever to say what we can and cannot say.
Right. It's not so much you're suggesting promoting smut or trashy programming. You're just saying there's a freedom of marketplace and a First Amendment freedom that needs to be exercised, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so are there other examples of you doing some digging and find that that what the FCC is suggesting as complaints become different once you look at it?
Oh, a little bit. I filed another one about the 9 complaints regarding the opening of the Olympics that caused an investigation of the Olympics. Air America's Morning Sedition, where I kind of appear as a media critic, and I filed a complaint. And the FCC kind of cut me off the pass and put the complaints up online, and they're laughable. They're ridiculous. And people complain about promotions for The Exorcist. I think part of it is probably Howard Stern fans who are gaming the FCC to show how ludicrous this all is.
Mm-hmm.
There's danger coming at this term of Congress, coming in the indecent indecency legislation that did not pass last time or did not get to the president's desk last time. He's going to come up again. And the problem here is that, as you say, congressmen, if they vote against this, they seem to be voting for smut. What they should be doing is seeing that they should vote against this bill to vote for the First Amendment and for our freedom of speech and for our Constitution. And we've got to give them some, we in media have to give them some cover for that. You know, instead you have Viacom signing a consent decree saying, okay, we'll fire Stern if we have to, when they should be turning around and fighting.
You know, it's interesting, and regardless of your political slant, if you're a First Amendment person that believes in the First Amendment, that you don't have to be a liberal necessarily, other than to simply just say, you know, the marketplace should determine what is spoken, and we all should have the freedom to do that. And I think the biggest problem with the FCC is that they really haven't stepped out and defined what constitutes indecent.
Well, right, and they refused to, so that the F word was found to be indecent when Bono said it, but it's not indecent when it's on Saving Private Ryan. But they wouldn't tell the stations beforehand that it wasn't indecent. So the stations, you know, though they've been excoriated for not running Saving Private Ryan, the 66 who chose not to, well, the FCC had made it clear that this was a federal offense, the F word in broadcast. So there's no clear way, and that just shows the idiocy of this. You cannot have the government decreeing what we can and cannot say. And media has changed so much that the old arguments about broadcast, that it is uniquely pervasive, are wrong now. 11% of the country gets their TV through rabbit ears.
Right.
The rest through cable. My kids, your kids, don't have the faintest idea of the difference between broadcast and cable. And that's going to get even more muddy as we go forward to the Internet, and you get what you want, when you want it, where you want it. So these old laws relating to broadcast and the public good are a bunch of hooey.
We have just a few minutes left. Do you think, do you foresee issues with regard to controls, FCC controls on satellite radio?
I think there may be some attempts at the FCC and in Congress to do that, but it certainly is not constitutional. The only arguments that there were, I think the regulation of speech on broadcast is unconstitutional, but the way that works is by having a very limited band of saying that this was uniquely pervasive broadcast and it stood in a unique position. Satellite and cable are services that you choose to buy and put in your home or not.
And as you point out, if cable is more pervasive today, then do the laws, I guess they're shifting now to where FCC is suggesting, because the cable is more pervasive, that they're getting involved with controlling content on cable, huh?
Which they shouldn't, for the same reason. It's just not constitutional. It is your choice. None of this should be happening.
Yeah.
You know, we really have to trust the marketplace. And if you don't trust the marketplace, then you don't trust democracy.
Could it be suggested that broadcasters reacted to cable? And, well, we're going to have to save this for after the break, aren't we, Ray?
We can do it. Yeah. We can do it. We'll be back with Jeff Jarvis, president and creative director at Advance.net. We've got him for the whole 2 hours today. Still to come this hour, we've got Goodvertising, our advertising showcase, as the New Year is underway. And what else do we have? Well, just a bunch of stuff. Stick around, okay, on the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe.
World of Marketing.
Wacky World of Marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update asks, what do crocodile dung and beaver testicle tea have in common? Well, they were both used as contraceptives. That bit of trivia can be learned at the History of Contraception Museum at Case Western Reserve University. Now, out of Cleveland, more than 650 items are in the collection at the one-of-a-kind museum. The school's chief curator, James Edmondson, says, yeah, there can be an initial giggle factor when visiting the Birth Control Museum, but he says there's a serious side to the collection. He notes the quest for birth control transcends religions and cultures. And that, my friends, is the wacky world of marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
Good morning. Why, you're not my daisies.
Right, Mother Nature. They're Chiffon's new daisy servers. Taste.
Oh, it's my sweet, creamy butter.
Nope, it's new chiffon margarine. Chiffon has the fresh-churned flavor of butter.
It's chiffon margarine, not butter. Oh, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature. You think it's butter, but it's not.
It's The Advertising Show and a classic spot. It's not nice to fool Mother Nature. There's a spot that might have been challenged if people were challenging spots back then. That's not realistic. No, yeah. It's called creativity, I guess is a good way to put it. Jeff Jarvis is president and creative director at Advance.net out of New Jersey with us this weekend.
Yeah, welcome back to the show, Jeff. And by the way, if you'd like to visit what Jeff does during the daytime, his day job, it's Advance.net. And then don't tell his boss because he's spending most of his time at BuzzMachine.com.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. By day, blog boy by night.
There you go, blog boy. And, of course, by night, you can reach him through BuzzMachine.com. And I would encourage all of our listeners to go to BuzzMachine.com. There's some really great content being talked about there. Just to wrap up our conversation about First Amendment and broadcast versus cable and all the things going on today, is it a fair assessment to say that over-the-air broadcast television was affected by cable's ability to be pushing the envelope, say, 10, 12 years ago and saw a spike in ratings and decided, well, maybe we need to do a little bit of that and was influenced in that way?
Well, I think that each medium is a little bit different, but I think we're going to – the change is not nearly ended. Andrew Tyndall, who does the Tyndall Report on TV News, said this week, for example, that with the onslaught of cable coming onslaught of online coming to affect cable, that cable news probably saw its zenith in 2003 and it's all downhill from here. Hmm. So we're going to see the next wave of this happening. I think we'll see broadcast change more. We'll see cable change more. Hmm. I think we're going to see all kinds of new changes in terms of the kinds of content that can be created and the ways it can be distributed.
You know, it's an exciting time we live in, and a lot you have to say about that. Let's begin by laying some groundwork, Jeff, if you would, about blogging. For our audience that may not be familiar with blogging, give us a brief description.
Blogging is extremely simple. It is the world's and history's easiest publishing tool connected to the world's best distribution network, the Internet. Hmm. It's as simple as going in and you go to a site like Blogspot, and in 2 minutes you can be publishing to the world. You fill in a blank, you hit send, and boom, you're on the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
No muss, no fuss.
So the responsibility of bloggers today, I mean, are we running some risk here of just information flying in all different ways and concern about authenticity? Or
you run that risk at the corner diner or bar.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still the people, and I trust people in the long run. And no, actually what happens on blogs is that it's a rather self-correcting mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a crackpot and nobody links to it, it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
It might as well not exist.
Yeah.
If it does exist, what happens is that people correct blogs immediately. If I make a mistake in my blog at Buzz Machine, people swarm in around me like white blood cells on germs and tell me I'm wrong. Or they just tell me they disagree with me and they think I'm wrong.
Right.
Whatever. Bloggers are the ones who corrected Dan Rather. There's a very correcting mechanism to this. You have to trust the people and the wisdom of the crowds, to quote the title of James Surowiecki's new book. We're smart people. And again, if you don't believe in that, then you don't believe in democracy or markets,
mm-hmm.
or a lot of things. But if you do believe that we're essentially smart and decent people, then what blogs do is enable that to happen. So now you find all kinds of new content that comes out. It's the nichification of media, the ultimate nichification of media. It's not just going from, you know, two newspapers to three networks to 100 cable networks. It's now going to limitless choices and limitless interests.
Were you the one that termed citizens media? Did you come up with that?
I'm one of many who probably did, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I prefer that to blogging, because it's more than that. It's using tools that aren't just text. It's also going to be audio and video and other things we'll talk about to create content. And so these are, again, extremely easy tools. I help people get going in Iraq blogging. You can do it from anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell your story to the world.
Right.
And so what it means is we have new viewpoints, new sources of news and information, new diverse viewpoints coming out to the Internet, and new ways, by the way, from an advertising perspective, to reach very targeted, very involved, influential audiences. at a very low cost.
Well, you know, there's even a blog called regrettheair.com launched in October devoted to newspaper corrections, and I think that just echoes the point about, how today people out there, Joe Sixpack, is policing the media, and I think the example you give with Dan Rather and certainly also Howard Dean and some commentary on him when he was running for president. There's been a lot of positive come from, I think, from bloggers. And I want to get your take on the business model that you might speculate on evolving, considering the huge potential of citizens' media and advertising. What are your thoughts on that, Jeff?
I think it's starting now. You have sites like Gawker Media that have sold to very high-end advertisers, Gawker.com, Wonkette.com, the famous political blog, Gizmodo, a gadget blog, and Nick Denton, who started that company, who's a friend of mine, really did an amazing job of creating high-quality content, and he's getting high-quality advertisers there. On a much smaller scale, you have a site called Blog Ads, where you can buy ads on individual blogs for too low a CPM, I might add. But there you have bloggers who are making up to six figures, political bloggers, during the campaign.
Now, how do these ads appear? Are they banner ads?
They're mainly sidebar ads.
Uh-huh.
And, it's a fairly rudimentary system. It's fairly basic right now. You have to buy one blog at a time, but it shows the potential in the beginning of this. I think that where this goes in the long run is that advertisers I've talked to, will want to buy more than one blog at a time. They'll want to buy networks of blogs. They'll want to buy the blogs who have the most influence, which we can kind of measure now. But what you really get is you are able to have a new relationship with people. It's more than just buying an adjacency on content. It's more than just buying the demographic of the audience. What you're really, truly getting involved in is a new relationship with your consumer.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about relationships and blogs. And by the way, theadvertisingshow.com has been passed around to many blogs worldwide, and that's how we've picked up an international audience.
By the way, with Jeff Jarvis here on The Advertising Show, Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth, President and Creative Director of Advance.net, out of New Jersey this weekend. We'll be back with more in just a minute.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
Cut. Reload. That's a complicated-looking machine, isn't it? Funny thing is, a lot of people still think that taking home movies is that complicated, too. If that were true, believe me, I wouldn't take them. For instance, he's reloading the film. Let me show you how easy Kodak has made it for you and me with a Kodak Instamatic movie camera.
That's a great spot with Dick Van Dyke, a classic spot from the 60s that really connects with the brand. You know, Dick Van Dyke with the movies and shooting home movies. Fantastic.
Trip
well
over
done.
The Ottoman.
It just goes to show you that the great spots have always been made. They're just got to go find them, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
Special guest is Jeff Jarvis, President and Creative Director at Advance.net.
Yeah, welcome back to the show, Jeff. You were mentioning media distribution and how that's about to change or even changing as we speak. As consumers gain control, does this mean media companies lose control?
Not necessarily. Well, yes, everyone loses control, and that's a good thing. To me, the most important invention in media was not the printing press, it was the remote control, because that put people in control of what they consumed. Add to that, of course, the cable box and the VCR and the TiVo, and consumers had more control, and they went to what they wanted to get, and they were better served. And so some complain about the nichification of the audience, the fragmentation of the audience. Well, people who complain about that are mainly people who only work in huge mass audiences.
Mm-hmm.
But the consumers, we folks out here, want to get what we want when we want it. We don't want to have to be served the same thing that everybody else gets all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very good thing in media. Well, now go to the next step here. We don't just control the consumption of media. We can control the creation of media and the distribution of media. And we can all create media, too. Well, if you're a big media company, you can look at that and say, oh, my God, look at what's coming on us. Or you can say, I'm losing money in a lot of ad categories right now. It's going down. If you look at the locally this last season, local retail is getting subsumed to a great measure by online. Classified's an issue. Upfronts keep on going up in TV, and that can't keep on happening, of course, as audience keeps going down. So the economics of media are going to have to change. Well, you have a new source of very inexpensive and wonderful new kinds of programming. And that's how we have to look at this, I think, is to see that the people are creating great new things. And if we're smart, we'll find a way to embrace that rather than dismiss that.
And you know, you and I were talking off the air earlier in the week, and you mentioned as a good example of this, and you might want to chat about this, is John Stewart's Crossfire.
Absolutely. You know, it had to be before that to get out to the audience, you had to be on a big network, CNN. Well, CNN, when John Stewart was on Crossfire, could reach what, maybe 500,000 people?
Tops.
That same segment is up online at iFilm and BitTorrent, a means of distributing video. And it's done probably 10 times that, conservatively, which is to say that the new distributed content network that exists is more powerful in the long run than the old pipes.
By the way, Crossfire wishes they had a 500,000 viewers.
I'm being generous. Yeah. Yeah. What is the number? I
mean, well, it's in the hundreds of thousands and probably not more than a few hundred tops, but I'm throwing that out as an estimate.
But you're getting millions on this new distribution. But so what that also means is a couple things have happened. One is you have new tools. Two is you have new software, which I can talk about in a minute. Three is you have new means of distribution, the Internet and BitTorrent that makes it cheaper. And four is you have new means of finding this stuff so that, as we saw in the tsunami videos recently, people could find them through blogs. They didn't just see them on TV. Now, what this means now is that TV kind of explodes apart, and now anybody can create TV, and anybody can distribute TV, and you're on a somewhat equal playing field, not quite equal yet, but you start to see an equal playing field where rather than spending hundreds of thousands of dollars for half an hour to make a show for, let's say, home decor, I can make a credible show with one camcorder and a Macintosh for a couple $100. I can make Jeff's Trading Spaces, right? The differential in cost is so extreme that I can put this on the Internet. It can be found, and I can put advertising on it, and advertisers would be happy to have TV because they've wanted to turn the Internet into TV since the beginning. And now suddenly there's a new economic model going on here with a new audience creating new content.
And we have just a little over a minute left. You mentioned, by the way, remote controls, beginning with the control of the consuming of media. Ray and I are just old enough to have to go back to buttons on the AM radio for the original control,
buttons,
I think.
Buttons, a knob.
My first remote control had a wire. My beard is.
That's funny. A little less than a minute. Niche audiences, I guess. That's really where we're going with all this, aren't we?
The mass audience dies and the mass of niches lives. You have to put together and stitch together a whole bunch of niches to create an audience. But that's going to be good in the long run for advertisers because they're going to see that they can create a far better target than they ever could before. It's far more efficient.
So you just buy multiple niche markets to broaden your reach?
And you find new ways to do this. We can talk about in a minute in terms of changing the control of advertising too. Put the control of advertising in the hands of your customers.
Interesting concept. We'll talk more about that after the break.
We've got Jeff Jarvis on the way for hour number two of the advertising show as well, here with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth. Jeff is president and creative director of Advance.net, overseeing the internet operations for Advance Publications. Those include Vanity Fair, Glamour, Vogue, and Condé Nast internet activities. Also, a former television critic for TV Guide. And we'll have him next hour as well. Hopefully, we'll have you, too. Here at the advertising show, we've got the advertising showcase on the way. Next hour, it's John Margolis's Guerrilla Marketing for the 21st Century. His question is, can I buy you a drink? And Brad's answer was
two.
Two. Okay, it's good.
One for you.
Thanks. Back in just a minute.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Colgate toothpaste, the tooth toughener. How can that be? Well, it contains advanced MFP fluoride. It's the only toothpaste that does, and it does toughen tooth enamel. With tougher enamel, the children won't have so many cavities. It's that simple.
Really can't do a long list of classic, amazingly good spots, and the same goes for the people who do them. That's Arthur Godfrey for a really classic spot from Colgate. That's the way you sell product, folks.
Nobody better.
Be honest. And Jeff Jarvis, it's good that he's going to come back next hour and be with us, president and creative director at Advance.net. By the way, if you don't take the advertising show, if your radio station doesn't take it for hour number two, keep in mind that we stream this show live as well. So it's theadvertisingshow.com, and you can pick up both hours there. But hopefully they do. If they don't, call your congressman.
Right.
Or your program director.
Right. Or the
your
general
GM,
manager.
Or the sales manager.
Just raise hell with
call
someone.
An account executive.
Yeah, just someone.
The secretary.
Call anybody.
Radio stations don't have secretaries
blog
anymore.
Blog somebody.
Though.
Spam them.
That's right.
Hey, you know, Jeff was talking about niche programming and putting the ads. He ended with a comment that I thought was extremely interesting, which is putting the ads back in control of the consumer. And I have the, you know, advantage of over others that I've read about this. And that was very – it's a very intriguing idea, which he'll talk about next hour.
Good. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good tease.
Yeah.
We've got Jeff coming your way in just a few
You think
few
that's a
here.
Good tease. Look at this.
All right. We've got – every week we look at the good and the bad side of advertising. What that means is we take an ad, take it apart, put it back together, and hopefully it comes out with a four-star rating. I think this week is going to be a four-star.
And now it's time for the Advertising Show's Advertising Showcase, an outstanding example of on-target advertising. For the good stuff, here's Ray and Brad.
Going into the new year, it's good to have a couple of good things. I think we had good advertising last week. As
Torno, well. Was it Torno?
Yeah, it was. The watch thing.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. What you got?
Yeah, well, pull up a seat and let's have a nice warm cup of coffee, because it is ironic that we would feature Starbucks, a brand that was built on little to no advertising as our advertiser showcase, but not really in this case, because this past holiday season, perhaps you saw, like I did, and maybe you did too, Ray, an outdoor campaign for Starbucks, the coffee house, not the products you see in your grocery store. And if you did, you saw the headline, Celebrate the Holidays with a Peppermint Mocha. Not that I would have that, but Celebrate the Holidays with a Peppermint Mocha, which appeared vertically to the left side of the billboard. And then graphically to the right, you see two huge candy canes. And subtly embedded into the large candy canes, you have to look for this.
Yes.
You see a very small Starbucks logo. You know, the ubiquitous green round logo we all
very
see everywhere today.
Right.
Yes. How often here on the show have we said, don't get in my face with your ad message? We consumers are not nearly as interested in your product or services as you think we are, or that you are in telling us about it.
Sure, it's an ad.
Right. So the compliment here for Starbucks is as easy as we always say, and that is less in advertising is often more. And here on holiday billboard execution by Starbucks is a great demonstration to other advertisers how subtlety and less meaning – I'm sorry, less messaging will always outperform and reach the consumer in a more favorable way than screaming and yelling and stumbling all over yourself to get attention and ultimately try to sell your product. So if you saw that billboard, it got your attention, could have had a nice headline. I mean, just the headline, Celebrate the Holidays with a Peppermint Mocha.
Right.
Automatically, you're probably thinking this is a Starbucks deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you have the two big candy canes there off to the right, you start saying to yourself, who is the advertiser here?
Mm-hmm.
And you find as you're getting closer to the board, now you're engaging with the board and you see the round green logo among, in between the two peppermints, and you say, aha, Starbucks. And it leaves you with a warm and fuzzy, and it doesn't feel like they hit you over the head with them, with their message. So congratulations to Starbucks and their agency, Wieden & Kennedy, for an outstanding example of outdoor or any kind of advertising for that matter.
I think it's important, too, to recognize the importance of keeping your ad, your billboard ad, simple. And if you're in the car right now listening, just look out the window along the freeway.
Not for very long,
though. If you have billboards, well, you have 6 seconds because that's all the time you have to see an ad. And I bet you see – here's the ones that I really hate, the outdoor boards that I really hate.
Right.
The ones with the pictures of the people.
Right.
And maybe their dog, maybe the family. It's like, what are you guys doing? Is this an ego stroke or whatever? You know, go donate that money that you would spend on that board for something useful.
Well, think about it. Other than the guy and his immediate family and employees, who remembers the company, the name, the product, or whatever the hell they're selling?
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing. Yeah.
No, I think a lot of people make a mistake. I think outdoor advertising is absolutely phenomenal, but I think so many people use it wrong. It's in this market. It's in your market. I know it's in your market.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to cram too much stuff into a billboard or put your family on there. Come
on. Next week we're going to talk about direct mail. And I've seen an increase. I'm sure you have too, Ray. An increase of junk mail in my mailbox since they did the do not call with the direct telemarketing.
Right.
And, these people that do direct mail, they are the biggest offender of thinking that we're interested and what they have to say.
Yeah.
And if they were just to see all of us.
Why do they call it junk mail, folks?
I mean, I'm hearing trees crashing every day when I throw all that away.
Yeah, isn't that sad?
It really is
sad. It really is sad. That's next week?
Yeah.
Okay, good. We'll have Jeff Jarvis on for hour number two of the Advertising Show. Jeff is out of New Jersey this weekend, president and creative director at Advance.net, and more on a whole bunch of stuff from Jeff. We've got next hour, Jonathan Margolis, guerrilla marketing for the 21st century. It's going to be Can I Buy You a Drink? Jeffrey Gittimer is with us, hour number two, with establishing confidence with your customers. That's an important aspect as well. Advertising Show is brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit online at adage.com. Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. And remember, if you don't get hour number two on your radio, you can get it on your internet at theadvertisingshow.com, which is also a great place to find a bunch of different media resources and the information that you might put to use there. So we'll be back, and hopefully you will be too.
Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
Welcome back to hour number two of The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth. Our special guest this hour, Jeff Jarvis, president and creative director at Advance.net. And Jeff will be on here in just a little while. This hour we have for you, guerrilla marketing for the 21st century. Can I Buy You a Drink is Jonathan Margolis' topic. Okay. Jeffrey Gittimer talks about establishing confidence. Andy Borowitz is in the White House and talking about an unusual new hire at the beginning of the year, and I'm not sure this guy's going to be able to keep his job, but we'll see. Advertising Show brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. Advertising Show, a Big Radio Midgets production. So here we go, hour number two. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. You know the great part about having your refrigerator conk out on you? When you come in that evening,
your ice cream's soft.
Well, your cheese, the imported $12.95 a pound cheese that
green?
You bought it.
Green?
No, it's more room temperature, so it's ready to go. And your beer is, your imported beer is more the
more English,
temperature
yeah.
that they recommend. Right. And then, of course, your wife enjoys later on throwing away all those hot sauces that you had pre-Y2K.
Yeah.
That you've been holding on to?
Oh, yeah.
I've been holding on to, waiting for you to come over.
Okay.
And then what else was there?
So did you get a new one?
We had some wonderful Italian soup that I had made the night before.
Which would be good.
Well, it didn't take as long to warm up.
I'm sure
it's always good. So.
It warmed itself up, I'm sure.
Well, it was still cool enough in
the
refrigerator.
What's that interesting new texture? Is that Parmesan?
It was about 40. It was about 50 degrees in there.
It's Gouda cheese.
Yeah. It's blue now.
So what do you have, a new refrigerator?
Coming soon.
Good.
Yes.
Good.
And should be there by now.
Went out to eat, didn't you?
No, actually, I'm serious. It was still cold enough to where everything was okay. It was cool enough. But that was a, then came the old way of doing things, which is code for hello, igloo.
Yeah, right.
And a bag of ice.
Exactly.
Yeah, so.
So it's how to fix your refrigerator this hour in the advertising show.
Yeah, this is the home repair show.
Yeah. Was it plugged in?
Look where I'm keeping my screwdriver.
Was it plugged
Do you
in?
Like it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish that was my only problem. That's about as technical as I could get. I could check that to make sure that was fine.
Yeah, Brad said the light kept staying on.
Yeah, every time I opened the door, I couldn't believe it.
Like, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Who is it? Jonathan Margolis, guerrilla marketing for the 21st century. Well, it's a good idea. Let's play it.
And now it's time for Jonathan Margolis with guerrilla marketing for the 21st century.
Picture it. You're in a bar with your buddies. A group of friendly, attractive, outgoing young women seated nearby offer to buy your next round to help celebrate a promotion one of them received at work that day. Being the gentleman your mothers raised you to be, you all gladly accept. Was this in fact a friendly barroom gesture, or rather, another example of an unconventional marketing ploy? Sorry to say, my friend, it was most probably the latter. Stealth marketing, also known as undercover marketing, is when agencies send people out, well, undercover, to push a particular product or brand. Things like alcohol, cigarettes, even consumer electronics. Critics of this type of marketing say it's tinkering with our minds and blurring the line between real life and sponsored life. Brands who use it say marketing is most effective when you don't know it's marketing. Is this type of marketing appropriate for your product or brand? Well, that's of course for you to decide. In the meantime, the next time an attractive woman offers to buy you a drink, you may want to ask who she's working for. For now, this is Jonathan Margolis for The Advertising Show, reminding you, it's a jungle out there. Be a gorilla.
This has been Guerrilla Marketing for the 21st Century with your host, Jonathan Margolis, president of the Michael Allen Group. To learn more about Jonathan and his company, log on to michael-allen.com.
Which goes to say there ain't no free lunch, okay?
That's true.
There's a good chance there's a little connection there when you're offered a free drink. Has anybody ever offered you a free drink at a bar?
And I told him I was married.
Did you?
I didn't realize what kind of bar I was at.
It wasn't Pico's, that's for sure. you know, this is interesting. This is Office Depot, and they had a tagline, taking care of business. Mm-hmm. Ran it for years. Yeah. I didn't know that it went away. But they said they're looking to their future with a return to the past, Office Depot restructuring, resurrecting the tag, taking care of business tagline that helped it grow from a small chain to number two office products retailer. I think it had more to do than the tagline.
Sure.
The move part of an effort to concentrate on its business customers and catch category leader Staples, which I didn't realize that Staples was a category leader. We see their ads, but we have no Staples. At least I don't know. Do you know if there's a Staples here in Houston?
I couldn't tell you.
See?
I couldn't tell you.
That's very strange.
But I'm not the buyer of such goods at my company. But you know what's interesting? They probably did some research on that Office Depot deal.
Sure, right.
And they probably found a lot of people still remembered that tagline.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's probably the strategy behind going back to it.
Well, they're great sounding spots, too.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot. You know, it's interesting because a lot of advertisers today in the last 2-3 years have all taken a look at what they're doing, which, you know, you may be asking yourself, where's the audience as opposed to the creative? But then they find there's a need to go back to the old stuff. And maybe that has to do with the fact that back then you actually could reach the masses, and mass marketing was something that could happen back in the 90s. And today it just doesn't work because of the media fragmentation.
So what necessarily may seem logical is not logical.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good line, too. This is Tony Huber, Vice President of Marketing Strategy and Decision Support for the Office Depot brand. And he says marketing executives, listen to this, marketing executives get tired of taglines and positionings much faster than consumers do.
Oh, no kidding.
And we say that to Mr. and Mrs. Businessman and Businesswoman.
Mm-hmm.
By the time you're getting tired of the ad that you're running or the slogan you're running, it's finally sinking into the noggins of the people you want to get your message. So
at best.
Patience.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they're just starting to get the idea, you know, by the time Joe owner there gets tired of it. But
yeah,
you're right. You know, a lot of advertisers don't realize that as you sit there and have your agency or whoever's in charge of your advertising present all this to you prior to it going out into the public venues, then you've already seen many previews of it. You've seen the evolution of it. So chances are, that's my theory as to why sucky ads in the newspaper and elsewhere get on the air and in the publication, because when the owner or the ad agency guy sees the ad, they go, oh, I spotted it right off. Well, hell, you had a preview. You had several previews.
Of course you did.
Yeah.
Ask an impartial judge or something like that.
Go check
anything
your consumers.
But a focus group, folks.
Yes, anything but a focus group.
Jeff Jarvis is on the way here in just a few minutes, and he'll be with us for the remainder of this hour. Jeff is president and creative director at Advance.net. We've got about a half minute left.
Lindsay Lohan just celebrated a milestone, and no, Ray, it has nothing to do with her love life.
Mm-hmm.
She's the 200th celebrity to do the Got Milk commercials.
Is she really?
Yeah. The Milk Mustache campaign, of course. And her message is, I may be on the way up, but I still drink milk. Lo created the campaign. Now, just a little bit of useless trivia. Whose face launched the Milk Mustache campaign 10 years ago?
I do not know.
Do that song. Do, 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 do. Naomi Campbell.
Naomi.
Well, I know her from the old days.
Naomi?
Yeah.
So that's it was the first one that launched that?
According to this material.
Really?
Yeah, according to Media Post Communications.
Well, you're right. It's absolutely useless material.
MediaPost.com. That's why I called it useless trivia.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
You have some more useless trivia?
Yes.
You're 59.
59? That's what I'd like to shoot in golf.
I said it was useless.
Okay, thank
this
you.
Will be the 2005 will be the year that I finally caved in and bought reading glasses.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I don't have them with me, but I bought them.
Well, say amen to that, right? You're not going to wear them, right?
No, but people keep saying, what do you look down your nose at me?
Reading glasses are okay.
Well, they're all right.
Not a big deal.
Yeah.
We've got Jeff Jarvis on the way with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillings and Brad Forsyth.
What is this, a sleepwalking concert? Where's your laugh, your jazz? Come on, kid. Wake up.
Thanks. I needed that.
If you need waking up, slap on some skin bracer.
I'm surprised the guy didn't punch him back.
Today they would have, yes.
Classic spot, Ray Schillings, Brad Forsyth, a couple of classic guys, I guess. You know, we're at that age, reading glass age, right? Sure. Jeff Jarvis is our guest this hour, president and creative director at Advance.net, which oversees the Internet operations for Advance Publications and the Newhouse Newspapers. Jeff, it is so good to have you on the Advertising Show. Thanks for sticking around for hour number two.
I'm having fun.
Yeah, and if you want to see some real world off the... What would we call it? Without the suit and tie on, we'd call it buzzmachine.com, which is Jeff's blogging site, and it's a great site to visit. I encourage all of our listeners to take a visit. And by the way, Courant.com is where – is that how they say that, Jeff, Courant?
I have no idea. I think it's close enough. C-O-R-A-N-T-E.com.
Right. I'm going to call it Courant.com. And that happens to be where we got our first connection with Jeff, a wonderful article entitled The Future of Digital Media. I assume you can still pick that up at Courant.com. Do you have that on your website at Buzz Machine?
Yeah. I'll put a new link up. So people can find it directly.
Yeah, it's a great peek at the future of digital media. And let's jump back in where we left off last hour as we move to a one-size-fits-all media landscape, I would suggest, to a more niche content that suits the individual needs of a particular audience. So what are your thoughts on how media companies and marketers make the shift to digital media today?
I think it may be hard, but I think in the long run it's quite beneficial. And my first law of media and life is that I'll bet on those who give consumer control, and I'll bet against those who don't give the consumer control. And that we've learned that in media. If we give people a remote control and the means to create stuff, they'll do it. And now we need to learn that in advertising, too. Mm-hmm. Why shouldn't I have some measure of transparency with the targeting of ads toward me? And if I'm not looking for a car, what if I tell you that? And what if you save the money on my eyeballs? Wouldn't that make sense for both of us? It's not going to work for everything. I'm never going to ask for toilet paper ads. No. But ads that I actually want are useful for both of us, are efficient for both of us, mm-hmm. work on both ends. There's a lot of quotes that I put into PowerPoints, obnoxious PowerPoints, and show to advertisers. One is by a blogger named Doc Searles, who says that the word consumer is outmoded. It presumes that we just sit there and consume content and crap cash, mm-hmm. in his words. One of the authors of the Clue Train Manifesto, which says that all markets are conversations, wrote Gonzo Marketing, in which Chris Locke, in which he said that we really have to get past this idea of the message of advertising being, I want your money, to I share your interests. And there are new ways, for instance, advertisers could basically underwrite weblogs. And by doing that, they're saying, well, we like this too. We're part of the same community. We are an equal plane with you. Or they can read blogs. The first thing I tell people in big media is don't write blogs. We've had the printing press for centuries. Now the people own the printing press. The people have a chance to speak. Let's listen. So the first thing anybody in big media or in big marketing should do is read blogs. I'll tell you, one of the best things you can do online is to go to Google, put in your brand name, followed by the word sucks. And you're going to find the stuff that people don't like about you. If you're smart, you're going to get to the next level there, and you're going to interact with those people, and you're going to solve their problems, and you're going to fix things, and you're going to get a good reputation for that. The next level you can go to is you could really try to underwrite some of these efforts. And again, you're saying that I now have a relationship with you that's different from just, I want your money. And then, yes, you can blog and you can engage in citizens' media like everybody else, but don't start there. Start with realizing that consumers want and have control now, and that should include everything. It should include the advertising they get and the message they get, and even to the point John Battelle wrote in Business 2.0 magazine this last month that something we've talked about online of what we call sell-side or publisher-driven advertising. What if an advertiser puts out an ad and the publishers decide whether to put it on their site or not? And if they do, and if it performs, they get paid. Mm-hmm. And if they don't perform, they don't get paid. That's another way to look at it. What if we say to the consumers, well, you can decide which kinds of ads you get to see. You're in market for a car? Fine. Here's car ads. What if we even allow consumers to create ads? And you could say, well, no, God, it's off our message. Well, maybe it should be off your message. Maybe it should be on the consumer's message. You start to explode the assumptions here about how media and advertising and marketing and consumption should work. And whenever you give control to the consumer in the long run, you're going to win.
And again, it's an example of losing control is a good thing when you can stay abreast of matters. I want to go back to what you said about companies and blogging and so forth. We've heard a lot about companies and their employees who create blog sites with the intention of favorably promoting their company's products or services under the guise of being a quote-unquote real blog. Is this a wise thing to do, or can this sometimes backfire?
If you do it with the effort to hide and push an agenda, yes, it's the wrong thing to do. But if you do it with human honesty, realizing you're talking eye to eye with other human beings, it's a great thing to do.
Hmm.
You know, Microsoft is frankly one of the most hated brands in some quarters around the globe. One person at Microsoft named Robert Scoble started a blog called Scobleizer, and he really has, in this whole blog world, single-handedly changed the reputation of Microsoft as a corporation with readers. And he gets quoted all over as a result now. But he's honest. He will say things critical of Microsoft. He'll say, oh, yeah, we messed that up, and I got to work on that. He'll go try to solve people's problems. He won't just push the company agenda. Obviously, there are limits to what he can say. Lawyers will be breathing down his neck. But, again, it's about having a relationship. That's what this new medium really means.
Mm-hmm.
You actually have a relationship with the people who just used to be consumers you never saw. You've got to treat them with that respect. And if you do, if you really truly communicate with them that way, then you can win. You can do great things. You can become the beloved Apple of your world.
Are there search engines that are dedicated to blog sites?
There are things that do it more than search engines. There's a company called Technorati, TechNorati.com. It tracks more than 5 million blogs and hundreds of millions of links among those blogs. What that really does is a couple things. Number one, it says, where's the buzz? What are people talking about right now? Number two, it tries to find out who the influencers are. Who gets the most links in?
Mm-hmm.
And number three, it enables conversations. So I check it regularly to see who is linking to my blog because those people have said something about it, and that's part of the conversation. I then read their blog, I comment on their blog, or I reblog back to what they're saying, and it shows that this is more than a one-way path. This is definitely a conversation. Technorati and PubSub is another one are very useful in that way. You could go into Technorati, put in your brand, and see what people are saying about it.
Let's imagine somebody's listening today, and they're either an individual or a corporate guy, and they've decided they're motivated to start their own blog. Where do you suggest they start?
You can go to services like TypePad or even Blogger and see how to do it. Again, I would counsel, don't start writing first.
Yeah.
Read first.
Mm-hmm.
Interact first. Give respect to the people first. But then if you say, I've got a message to get out there, then go to one of those services, or if you're lucky enough to have a 12-year-old son as a webmaster like I do, have him set up a server at a server farm and put up Google-type software. There's a lot of very cheap and easy things to do that way.
And what 12-year-old is not a webmaster these days, huh? That's for sure.
My son even makes money off his blog because of Google AdSense.
We've got to take a break here, Jeff. Jeffrey Gittimer on the way here in just a moment, establishing confidence with your customers. And back with more of Jeff Jarvis, who is President and Creative Director at Advance.net on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Quick Takes on Sales and Customer Relations with Jeffrey Gittimer, nationally syndicated columnist in the network of City Business Journals and other great publications worldwide. If you're offended by common sense commentary, don't you dare listen. Now, here's Jeffrey.
Fail to make the sale? No. You fail to establish confidence. Your prospect just said no. Aw, rats. Did you lose the sale or just fail to make it? You're sure that the prospect should have bought. As you head back to your car, licking your wounds, you try to justify or figure out why the prospect turned you down. Well, once you've answered the fundamental questions of self-doubt, was I enthusiastic, friendly, and professional-looking, you may have to probe a bit deeper for the true answers. Even though the truth hurts, the realization of what you failed to do is a big step in making the next sale. Let me give you and save you some anguish. You failed to establish buyer confidence, Sparky. Hey, Jeffrey, you're dead wrong. That guy really liked me, you say.
Maybe, but likability is only a part of the sales equation. One of the primary lessons of sales I teach is, if they like you, and they believe you, and they trust you, and they have confidence in you, then they may buy from you. If any one of those four elements are missing, the answer changes from sale to no sale. When the prospect says no, it's most likely a vote of no confidence.
Quick takes on sales and customer relations from The Advertising Show, the only radio show in America featuring Jeffrey Gittimer as a regular weekly guest. To learn more about his books, tapes, CDs, and speaking engagements, log on to Gittimer.com, G-I-T-O-M-E-R.com. And tune in next week when we'll hear Jeffrey say,
"This is Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you that if your advertising isn't getting any results, it's probably because your ad sucks."
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
Here are some most happy fellas, the four lads for Ford.
Standing on the corner, watching all the Fords go by. Standing on the corner.
Classic spot, the four lads for Ford Motor Company way back when, early 1960s, I bet, on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Our guest this hour, as well as last hour, is Jeff Jarvis, President and Creative Director at Advance.net. We've got Jeff for a couple more segments.
Yeah, welcome back to the show. At the end of the segment there, Jeff, you mentioned Google's AdSense. You've been quoted as calling Google a blind network, and you've been a bit critical of Google's AdSense method of connecting publishers with relevant advertisers. I think it's your place to talk about this and to help our audience understand how you do criticize Google and their AdSense method.
Well, let me first praise Caesar
before
I bury him. Google has done some very, very important things. First, getting people to the content they want. Second, showing the value of links, and that really values weblogs very much because weblogs live by their links. And third and most important, Google took the cooties off of citizens media. 10 years ago, people started homepages, and everybody said, "Oh, my God, I can't go there." Right? But now people are going up, buying a keyword. They're ending up on blogs, and they're not dying because of it. Mm-hmm. So Google's proved that, and that has ongoing value. It's helping support bloggers, including my son right now, and that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. However, it's the lowest rung of the value chain. It's all about advertising with the coincidence of a word on a page. And this new medium can go so much higher than that in value because, again, I'll keep repeating this over and over again. It's about relationships. Mm-hmm. It's about looking eye to eye with real people, real consumers, real customers. And so you can target to not only the content, not only the demographics of the audience, you could target to the demographics of the authors.
Mm-hmm.
If you're gonna launch a new Avril Lavigne album, what would be better than sponsoring the blogs written by 17-year-old girls? There's new ways to look at this that you've got a new relationship with your consumers. So Google starts that path going, and it proves where we can go, but we can go so much farther than Google and, frankly, also charge you higher rates, too.
Right. And I understand that you say in this scenario the publisher who is compensated through click-throughs is oftentimes penalized today because of the advertiser's creative sucking.
Absolutely, and that's been a problem since the beginning, but we're kind of, there right now. A lot of publishers are doing it. A lot of people are taking the ads. Even the New York Times takes Google AdSense. I don't think that a pay-per-click model is the only model that will work. I think there is a view of branding that works. There is a view of sponsorship that works. If you look at Nick Denton's blogs, he's really, as big publishers like the one I work for and people like the New York Times associated with the Online Publishers Association have been proving that branding works online. It's not just a direct response medium. But if you look at Gawker Media and what Nick Denton has done, he's had companies like Nike and Audi on his sites because they're cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's branding. That's the rub off of branding, and it really does work online because he has a cool audience of influencers.
I was reading about an audio publisher service released recently for bloggers called BlogAmp, basically giving bloggers a voice to go along with their content. Is this a good thing, or is this something that may, backfire when you start putting a voice with somebody's message?
Well, I think it'll work very, very well. In fact, I think it'll go to voice and video. Not always, by no means always. But I've played with some tools that allow you to create video very, very easily. There's something called Visual Communicator that gives you for $99, you get a teleprompter, and you get the ability to drag and drop inserts of audio and video onto a script that you read, so you have something to say, and there's no post-production. Mm-hmm. You can be Andy Rooney or aim higher in life and create video for no cost, for a $99 tool.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see a lot more video in the tsunami videos that came out hours before they did on TV online. Really showed the potential for video in this new citizens media world.
So streaming is going to follow the audio blog?
More than streaming. What's really going to follow is MP3s that people can distribute themselves for you.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, you know, give up some more control and let people do that for you. But if you do, they'll explode the distribution.
You know, in a clumsy way, we do that with our own site by offering to people to forward a copy of our show through the archive portion
right.
of our site. But you've got a great idea in converting it to an MP3 as opposed to a link back to the site, and that way it can go all over the world. Real quickly, just a couple more minutes left in this segment. Jeff, I want to get your take here. You're a formal traditional media guy, and now you're on the cutting edge of digital media. What angers you most about traditional media companies?
Oh, I think anger may be a little strong. They buy the suit, they pay the paycheck.
Yeah.
I think that it's more of trying to hope that folks in traditional media companies are open to this wonderful change that's coming. A lot of the change that's coming has been tough. You know, online is stealing revenue from us in some ways, right, in terms of traditional media. And we in traditional media are starting divisions like mine so that we can hold on to it and grab it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But there are new opportunities here for new content, new relationships, new kinds of advertising, new revenue, new sources of material that change. And I think what we have to do is not be hidebound by our old ways and be very open to this.
You know, I find myself reading letters to the editor section of papers when I'm out of town to get a sense of what's going on in the particular market I might be visiting. Why haven't newspapers, who've been losing market share for a few years now, offer a section of their paper where the editorial might be controlled by the readership?
That's starting to happen in a few cases. Two examples. One is in Bakersfield, California. The Bakersfield Californian has started a whole separate division, which did something I wanted to do, but they beat me to it, where they've created an online site where the citizens of a part of Bakersfield contribute all the content. They turn around then and print that in a new newspaper with its own brand and distribute that total market. And it's working. The paper, the print product is already profitable. You know, you're going to find that happening in a few cases where in Greensboro, North Carolina, there's been a lot of stuff online. If you go to a blog by Jay Rose of NYU called PressThink.org.
Jeff, we've got to take a break here on the advertising show with Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth, Jeff Jarvis, President and Creative Director at Advance.net. Back with one final segment in just a minute.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
You love Double Mint Gum. Double good, Double Mint Gum. Double fresh flavor, double smooth too.
This is The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth and a classic double mint spot. Jeff Jarvis is our guest. One final segment here with Jeff, President and Creative Director at Advance.net out of New Jersey this weekend.
Yeah, welcome back.
When you're having a good time.
Well, thank you. Thank you, and welcome back to the show, Jeff. You were talking about streaming and webcasting and so forth. Let's talk a little bit about that. The original idea behind webcasting was all about reducing travel and entertainment costs, yet today, I think if you talk to any marketer, the purpose behind their webcast, you rarely hear any T&E reduction to the quotient there. Bring us up to date on what you think are the issues, or not the issues, but the motivation behind a lot of webcasting today.
I just think it's more ways to create media. It's as simple as that. The tools are really in our hands so that we can create anything we want now: text, photos, audio, video, and people can create whatever they want, and it's a tremendous targeting tool. You can create the right. If you have an audience of two, that may be enough. There's a guy in Berlin, the Kunstspaziergänger. All he does is go out and take pictures of public art. He probably has an audience of about 10, but we love him. He's great, right? So you can create whatever you want to create for the right audience.
And
that gets to a whole new way to think about efficiency and about serving people directly.
Where does the local TV station 5-10 years from now, what does that portend for them?
I don't know. It's a very interesting thing. On the newspaper side here at Advance.net, I'm working very hard on getting hyper-local bloggers and citizens to come in and create blogs in towns so that we can get down to a local level on content that we never got to before. We couldn't afford to. We couldn't have newsrooms in every town. The audience gives us content. The audience gives us marketing and tells people, hey, look at this site. We now get so targeted that we can, we hope, start to sell advertisers to a new, find a new level of advertiser in terms of the pizzeria and the dry cleaner who couldn't afford to be in our papers before. Now, that's our hope. I haven't proven it's going to work yet, but that's our hope on a print side. I'm also going to merge into video and try to get people to give me video. From the TV side, they've got to come down and look at it in the opposite way and say, well, do we have to do print? Do we have to get down to a kind of video that we never would have had before because we're too highfalutin? You know, they have to look at citizens' media in the same way, and it's hard for them because they think so mass. Newspapers have always wanted to get more and more and more zoned and more targeted. We just couldn't afford to. The Internet allows that easier. But whether you are, you know, a local station or a national network or a big paper or a small paper, the need to get down to a hyper-local level of relationship with individuals is still the end goal.
You know, you see a lot of that today, and they try to plug it into their slogan for their local news or local TV, local daily newspaper, I should say, are trying to do that as well in their marketing. But it's more than just saying that that's what you are. It's really connecting on a relationship level, don't you think?
Yeah, and it's hard and it's new, and we're all learning this together, and I've made mistakes, and we'll make some more. But I think that it's really exciting. I got to start a whole magazine, and this is more fun than that because it is a whole new generation of how media is established. It really is an earthquake of a change in media, and I think that's good for us, and I think that in the long run we'll be better off for it. And in the meantime, it's a heck of a lot of fun.
We've got a couple minutes left here, Jeff. I want to give you ample time to give to the portion that I call the shameless plug portion of the show, and that is to talk a little bit about your blog site, I should say, buzzmachine.com. You know, are there email alerts people can sign up for? Is it just, what would they find if they came to buzzmachine.com?
You find an odd confluence of things that I like to talk about, which includes a lot of media, some marketing and advertising, news, Howard Stern, and gadgets and a few other things. It is very personal. It's just mine. When I started it after September 11th, I started it because of September 11th. I was at the World Trade Center when the towers came down. I wrote my story that day for online in the papers. I had more to say, so I started a blog. And I thought I would do it for a few weeks, and instead it takes over your available life.
Is that original article still there?
Yes, it is, and some audio that I recorded as well. But what it really did was it taught me about the future of media. And it's been invaluable in that way to see that there is really a new relationship and a whole new way to look at media. As Jay Rosen at NYU says, the writers are readers and the readers are writers now. It turns everything upside down.
Do you have any email alerts?
No, but you can learn to use RSS. And that's a whole other geeky thing that will be a whole other show. But if you use RSS, it's like smart bookmarks without any spam that tell you whether I've written something new since you last looked at the site.
And just real quickly, what changes have you noticed about your visitors at your site since you launched it in 01?
When new events happen, just as we saw on our online sites at events.net, you get new plateaus. So when the war comes, you find some new people come in. An election comes, different people come in. The tsunami came, and I was covering that, and different people came in. Howard Stern fans and different people come in, and some stick and some don't. A testament to whether I'm doing a good job or not, and a lot don't stick because they only cared about one thing. But the audience constantly changes.
I got to tell you, it's an exciting world we live in, and you are an outstanding guest, and I can't thank you enough. Ray and I had a great time with you today. Jeff, I hope you did as well.
You bet I did.
Jeff Jarvis, the president and creative director at Advance.net, and the other website is called, Brad?
That would be BuzzMachine.com.
BuzzMachine.com.
Oh, yeah.
Back with more final segment here for hour number two of the advertising show, and stay with us.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
I love her.
I feel light as a breeze.
I love her.
I've got Liverpool tea. She loves me.
Puts me at ease.
She loves me.
Advertising show, and glad to have you back for one more segment here this weekend with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, the Liverpool Tees. Brad, you still look good in Liverpool tees.
Thank you.
Yes, those Beetle boots and all that kind of good stuff.
A little tight. See my six-pack?
I'm sure. Your six-pack looks more like a carton there to me.
I was thinking a small pony keg.
I see. Okay. This is interesting, I think this is really smart. Somebody finally got it. The light went on, and somebody said, aha, we ought to do this.
General Electric.
No, yeah, true. More retailers, big retailers, expand to Hispanic marketing strategies.
Yeah.
How about that?
Hello.
What appears to be a major expansion of their marketing programs as well as their attitudes. Many big U.S. Retailers are spending more to target Hispanics and doing serious research to identify and develop. Now, that's really important, folks. You can't just put your ad out there in a different language because it won't work that way.
Right.
It never works that way.
Yeah.
So people like IKEA, Home Depot, JCPenney, and let's see, Circuit City, and all that kind of great stuff. That's good.
Well, and Univision Radio is with us again this year for our sponsorship in our local market in Houston, and just heard about that the other day. So thanks for that support.
Good.
Yeah.
Just keep sending the checks.
That's the most important part of that sponsorship. Yeah.
No, we appreciate that, too. On the way, well, why don't we do this right now? I think we ought to hear from Andy, don't you?
Sure.
This is interesting. Listen closely.
Hi, this is Andy Borowitz for The Advertising Show. And now, here's this week's feature from The Borowitz Report.
Still searching for someone to fill the post of Secretary of Homeland Security. President George W. Bush this past week hired a temp to do the job, the White House confirmed. The temp, Grady V. LeBeau, was tapped for the post after filling out an application and scoring above average on a typing test administered by the White House's Human Resources Department. While temps have been widely used in the federal government, most frequently as mail sorters and custodial workers, the hiring of Mr. LeBeau is believed to be the first time a temporary worker has been appointed to a cabinet-level post. At a White House press conference, spokesman Scott McClellan acknowledged that Mr. LeBeau was a little more than a stopgap solution, but added, he just had to get a warm body in there. But Mr. LeBeau, whose only work experience in the security field was a brief stint as a night watchman at a Walmart in Briscoe, South Dakota, may face an uphill battle for Senate confirmation, some insiders say. In particular, Senate Democrats have raised concerns about Mr. LeBeau's abrupt departure from his post at Walmart after several boxes of stolen Halo 2 Xbox games were found in the trunk of his car. As controversy swirled around the White House's latest hire, Mr. McClellan offered no timetable for when a permanent Homeland Security Secretary might be found. To be honest with you, we'll probably find Osama first. Elsewhere, despite New Year's resolutions, in the first week of 2005, Americans have gained over 1.2 billion pounds.
This is Andy Borowitz, and this has been a special edition of The Borowitz Report from The Advertising Show. To read more reports or to receive daily email alerts, log on to borowitzreport.com. This is Andy Borowitz saying, keep it fake, baby.
So, Andy, this past week on American Morning on CNN, and he didn't talk. He just sat there. He had good posture, though, and he just sat there. And 90-second pop. He just sat there.
Then nothing. He didn't say anything.
No, it's like the other guys wouldn't let him say something. I don't know.
I think he heard that there was going to be a two-minute version of that, and he was waiting for
the last
30 seconds.
Well, he got the wrong memo because he didn't talk.
Yeah. You know, he's a great candidate for the upcoming Kleenex commercials.
You think so?
He's the schnoz number two.
Yeah, he really is.
Who was it? Jimmy Durante, play a classic commercial there in The Advertising Show.
That's true. The only one that we have.
And he goes, achoo, achoo, and he's playing the piano.
It's a great, he was a great television personality back in the early days of television.
Yeah.
Before there were blogs.
When it was only black and white.
That's true.
And the only remote was your little kid brother.
But now, we have cable vision.
That's true.
And stuff like that.
Well,
Jingle vision. Okay. Kevin Berry's going to be with us next week. Is he?
Yeah.
Next week it's Vice President of the Cable Television Advertising Bureau.
Yeah.
So, actually, it says, does it say cable television?
Yes, sure it does.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Cable.
You get the wrinkled version.
Yeah, okay.
But, CAB is what they call it in the business.
Okay. And he'll be with us next week on The Advertising Show as well. What you got?
Well, you know, that's a good question. But what I have here is we talked about Howard Stern this hour. Mm-hmm. He's been kicked off four radio stations, and he claims to have been slapped with $200,000 in advertising bills for all the plugs he's been giving Sirius Satellite Radio this
Formally
past year.
Formerly a family feud because the top boss of the four stations, Citadel, Fareed?
Fareed.
Suleiman.
Right.
Was a longtime colleague of Stern's Infinity Broadcasting.
Apparently, he didn't like Stern, and he's getting back at him. Now, what's interesting about this is that the best of Stern, when they played that for the Syracuse station on the two-week holiday, they put Opie and Anthy on instead, which is an XM team, as opposed to Sirius, which is Howard's,
right.
Howard's new home next year.
Howard's not having any problems these days.
$200,000?
Nothing.
Yeah.
No big deal.
Yeah.
So next week, next week, Kevin Berry will be with us, Vice President of the Cable Television Advertising Bureau. Thank you for joining us. Remember, go to theadvertisingshow.com right after this, and you can actually hear a TiVo'd version, a condensed version, a compressed version of the show. It takes only how long? 79 wonderful minutes.
Minutos, if you're in the Spanish area.
The Advertising Show brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show, being a Big Radio Midgets production, promises to be a wonderful place to be next weekend, so we hope you'll be back with us then. It's Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe. Have a great week.